We should really start an anime podcast where it's basically just first chapters, but it's just first scenes where you recommend an anime for me, and I'm like, I got 6 minutes into this anime.
Well, there's two problems with that. The first biggest problem is I don't want to do it. The second problem is I honestly don't know that much anime, and what anime I do know is like 30 years old at this point. You'd have to find like some recent weebs. We could probably ask.
That's the title of our podcast, yeah, Recent Weebs.
Recent Weebs.
You're listening to First Chapters, a podcast from Grey Cat Books, with your hosts, Engineer Mike and Nina McNamara. Ever wanted to know if the first few pages of a book were good enough to continue reading? Will a book be engaging enough, or will it bore you to death? Then keep listening. The plot thickens.
That's enough talking about weeb shit. though, we will talk today about another guy who had perhaps some nerdy interest that a lot of people didn't know about.
All right, Engineer Mike, what are you reading?
Okay, what I'm reading this week is a book, once again, I've been wanting to read for a while. I get book recommendations here and there, and I'll add them to my Goodreads list so I can one day pick them up. And then when I have some spare change and spare time, I'll start reading it. And this is one I've been wanting to read for a while called Chain Gang All-Stars. Chain Gang All-Stars, yeah.
It's one hell of a title.
It is a book by an author that came out a few years ago, and Nana Kwame Adjei-Brenya, which I believe is some African origin name. He's a guy who's actually from New York.
That's what you get for assuming, Michael.
Yep. Did I said the name is of African origins. I didn't say the guy was African. That's why I read him and I said here he's from New York. The top comment for this book on Goodreads is just suck my dick, America. The book is
I want to read this.
I was going to suggest this book to you definitely.
Immediately I started thinking of Things Fall Apart by Chinua Achebe.
Interesting. I've never read that.
After I read that, I thought, for related reasons, suck my dick, America.
Yeah, this book, and I've read probably the first 50, 60 pages of it, the first like 3 or 4 chapters. It is an alternate future America. The book reminds me more of anything else than an interesting version of Infinite Jest. Like, to set it up, it's basically a world of gladiators, which are sourced upon from the ranks of prisoners in America.
Oh,
and it is this brutal story that just from page one fucking hits you with the reality of what the author is suggesting.
Where
the author is just, this is an America where a law was passed where prisoners who had life sentences, and I'm not spoiling anything, this is in the first like few pages of the book.
Yeah.
Prisoners who have life sentences or a sentence longer than 30 years can instead, to shorten their sentence and get freedom, enter gladiatorial combat for the entertainment of American populace.
A la Running Man.
Very much a la Running Man. Much as I loved Running Man from Stephen King, this book does it way, way, way better. You know, Stephen King writing about Running Man being a white guy from Maine could not see the idea of prisoners being forced to kill themselves for the entertainment of America the same as Nana Kwame Adjei-Brenya. You know, he's going to see things a little bit differently, a little bit more cutting. Not to pass judgment on Stephen King. I love The Running Man by Stephen King. Mm-hmm. But this book in just the first 70 pages, holy shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is rough to read.
Mm-hmm.
And not to mention, the whole thing makes me think of Infinite Jest the whole time. Because it's a near future alternate history America that is only a few years distant in our future. Where it's only a few years in the future, but the previous 30 years in that world were very different from our 30 years. You know what I mean? It's basically our time, but vastly different events have happened to set it up. As the kids say, goddamn, this book, seriously. Oh, I was definitely going to suggest this book to you.
Let me read this after
definitely,
you.
Definitely, yeah. So, Nina, what are you reading?
Well, as promised, I am continuing reading Three Body Problem by Shishin Yu.
Good. How do you feel?
That's a very difficult question.
Oh, good.
I'm about 40% of the way through.
Mm-hmm.
It's a slow burn for me.
Yeah.
I don't know if I like Three Body Problem.
So you've gone from really liking it the last time to this time you're like, I don't know if I like it anymore. Which is fine. All valid opinions.
Because one thing that we kind of touched on in the last episode, mm-hmm. and this is a hard science fiction novel, and the first two chapters mm-hmm. that I read are not hard science fiction.
No,
it is a
not.
Historical
yeah.
novel.
Yeah.
And then the hard science fiction uh-huh. hits, and you
start zoning out.
I'm really trying hard not to zone out with hard science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard not to. Forcing myself to go back and reread, trying mm-hmm. to understand understand, but it's dealing with a lot of physics and astrophysics stuff that I don't understand and I'm not interested in.
Okay.
In terms of writing quality. And, you know, again, we touched on this last...
It's a translation.
No, I'm going to say this is an author issue.
Mm-hmm.
He does make choices.
Yeah.
That I would not as a writer.
Well, we talked about that.
Like, he slaps a chapter or two in there that's pure fantasy. It's the history of something.
Uh-huh.
If you watch the Netflix series, you know exactly what this is. But it's talking about people who've been dehydrated and rehydrated.
What if I told you that wasn't fantasy?
I know that that's not fantasy because I've seen the Netflix series. So I know what's going on. But at the same time, had I not seen that and had I just come up to that chapter and read it, I would have been like, what the fuck am I reading?
Exactly. But see, I liked that in it because it's like so weird.
You like it? I didn't.
Well, I can tell you, if you feel like you liked this other part of the book,
that's the thing is I'm now back into the past again.
Oh, there you go.
Like Yuanji, she's back in the picture and it's now back in the past.
Okay.
And it's back to the historical drama I like so much. So,
keep reading.
I'm going to give it more of a shot, see how far I go. Yeah, I'm going to try. I'm going to give it my damnedest.
Okay. I can tell you, if you like those early parts, you'll keep liking the book because though the book is a bizarre book, it does keep swapping back and forth between parts that you'll like and then a part that I don't want to say drags, but kind of drags, but then it'll go back to another part.
And that's where my writer hat comes on and I'm like, at no point in a novel should you bore the reader. At every point, you should always build tension. At every point, you should always be leading to something. Yeah. You should never slow something down unless you're trying to draw attention to something. And to me, this is not, this is really bad. This is not good writing.
Oh,
but
passing judgment on Lu Zijin.
I know, I feel like an asshole, but I'm going to continue on for a little bit longer, see how far I get.
Please keep reading, because one of the neatest parts of the books is three quarters of the way through, when it does another perspective shift to a different setting and time, and you're not expecting it, and it's so neat when it happens. All the weird shit you're going through builds up to a point, and you're like, oh, now I fucking get it.
Yeah.
It makes it all worth it.
Yeah.
It really does make it all worth
it. Okay.
All right, to talk about the book that we have come here to talk about today. The book is called The Walking Drum by an author that the listeners of this podcast may not know intimately, but definitely your parents, grandparents, or most likely great-grandparents knew pretty damn well.
Louis L'Amour, I know this person, I'm a thousand years old.
Yeah.
But because Louis L'Amour was the most prolific Western author that ever lived. Honestly, I don't know if that's truth or hyperbole, but I feel very comfortable saying that's probably truth.
What would you compare him to, like as a writer in another genre?
You brought up Stephen King.
Yeah.
He is the Stephen King of the Western.
There you go. That genre is how well known he is in the history of writing.
Yeah.
As Stephen King is to horror, Louis L'Amour is to the classic Western novel. And I mean, Western as in cowboys and cow ranches and stuff like
Cowboys and Indians and stuff like that.
Yeah, Louis L'Amour is in incredibly huge body of work.
Yeah, and don't get him confused, as I did earlier, which was a faux pas of mine, with Larry McMurtry, who wrote Lonesome Dove. They are not the same.
I was literally sitting here about to say Louis L'Amour. You know, he wrote Lonesome Dove, right?
No, exactly.
Wow, I was about to make that same mistake.
I'm glad I jumped in there.
He didn't write Lonesome Dove.
No, that was Larry McMurtry.
I'll be damned.
But Larry McMurtry didn't write Westerns. He wrote about Texas, and it wasn't just about 1800s Western cattle ranches and the like. He also wrote The Last Picture Show, which was more at his time more modern day.
That's a really good movie. Watch one day. Happens to take place in Texas, but it's not necessarily about what we think of Texas when we think of Texas.
No. It's like, I mean, we're talking about Louis L'Amour here, but Larry McMurtry was a lot more nuanced than what you think.
Anyway, back to Louis L'Amour.
Louis L'Amour, again, he had the entire series devoted to one particular family.
Wow.
The Sackett family. And
I've heard of that somewhere, I swear.
Probably.
That's how well known these books are.
You hear that name, you're like, oh, I know those names.
Yeah,
like
you probably touched upon it at some point.
Yeah, you've seen these novels or these short stories on your parents, your grandparents, or your great-grandparents' shelf.
Yeah.
Like, my grandfather was a big Louis L'Amour
fan.
My
grandfather, too. Yeah, seriously, ton of Louis L'Amour novels.
I mean, if you didn't see these on your grandparents' shelves, it'd be surprising. Like if your grandparents read, they...
The way, like, a modern weeb will have a ton of, like, manga copies of something... He'll have all 57,000 copies of One Piece. Like, your grandparents had all 57,000 editions of Louis L'Amour books. You know?
Right, yeah. He also collaborated a lot in Hollywood.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
The Quick and the Dead was...
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
so, seriously?
Yep, that was a big one. Shit. When you think of Westerns, you think of Louis L'Amour's Westerns.
Yeah.
These big sprawling epics.
Yeah, he basically dominated a huge period in American culture.
Exactly.
And which is interesting, because I have read only one single Louis L'Amour book, and it's the one, could be the only one, I'm sure maybe he wrote a few, but it's the only one that I know of that's not a Western.
This is fascinating, because I took so many notes on Western, on the Western genre, and I don't think we're going to be able to use them.
No, this book we're talking about today, The Walking Drum by Louis L'Amour, does not take place in the American West.
That's true. It does not.
It starts in France in the 12th century. It is essentially medievalist historical fiction.
It's a Western as in Western Hemisphere?
Yeah, Western Hemisphere. And perhaps it is so far removed from the American West that I guarantee you there are diehard fans of Louis L'Amour that have either never read this book or don't even know it exists, or just didn't read it because it's not a cowboy novel. This book is a book that Louis L'Amour wrote in the later years of his life. He died just a few years after writing this book. And there is a tremendous amount of love in this book. There's someone who perhaps wanted to explore it more and never got a chance to. How the hell I even encountered this book is one day I was at my grandpa's house, of course. Okay. So I was just spending the day there for something. I may have been helping him build something. And he knew that I did read. This is right when I started reading. And of course, at that point in my life, I was reading Lord of the Rings novels.
Yeah.
And my grandfather, who didn't like Lord of the Rings novels for specific reasons that I will not get into, he liked books. He just did not like Lord of the Rings. He was like, hey, here's a book you might like. Swords and...
Tolkien's not manly enough.
No, that wasn't... Well,
I gotta put some
spit on your bones, you know? Here you go. Here's a real book. And he hands me a Louis L'Amour book, and I'm like, what the hell is this book going to be? Cowboy shit. And I start reading it, and I'm like, oh no, this is actually really fucking cool.
Yeah.
And I just blow through the book. You are basically following a character who exists in the world of 12th century Europe and the Near East. And you just go on an in-depth journey of this part of the world, which is clearly something Louis L'Amour, the author we're talking about, had also kind of like a...
fascination.
He had a fascination with, clearly. It's very interesting that it's not more well-known. I never hear anybody talk about this book. I've never heard it mentioned. It doesn't come up in culture. And it is a very cool book. Okay, Nina, so you finished, I assume, at least the first chapter of the book?
I finished the first two chapters.
Okay, first two chapters of the book.
Because they were relatively short, and they moved along at a reasonable clip. Mm-hmm. Like you said, they were written by someone who really loves this genre. You could tell. Yeah. Someone did a lot of studying.
Yeah.
Someone did a lot of research, because the way the prose is written, it's descriptive of what's going on, almost to the point of distraction.
Oh, interesting. So tell me, like, how does it start?
To keep it brief, here's what happens in the first two chapters. So this kid, or this child, this boy, he's referred to as boy.
Boy of indeterminate yet capable age.
Yes. He's a druid. He mentions that he's got a really great memory.
You mention that because it starts in Brittany, which is like one of those parts close to the British Isles where it has a very strong Celtic influence still.
This is one of the things I didn't like. Yeah. He says, I am a druid, and of course druids have great memories. And so I memorized this. It's those kind of descriptors it works for the book, but it's almost distracting because it's a lot of a lot of exposition.
You're hearing a nerd write about something.
Yeah,
Louis L'Amour was apparently a nerd for this shit and nobody ever knew about it.
Which I respect. I'm like, okay, this is an untapped fascination, as you said, of his. But it got kind of overwhelming, especially in the first chapter.
Yeah.
He's trying to book a ride on a ship.
Yeah.
And it's either like a privateer or a pirate ship, but it's a ragtag group of people. Yeah, of rapscallions who clearly don't know how to navigate. But he knows because he's a druid and he has all these skills.
He's a bit of a, is the term Mary Sue?
I think the male equivalent is a Gary Drew or I can't remember the trope.
He's kind of a Gary.
He's a Batman.
Yeah, he's a Batman. The main character of this book is not somebody you're ever really worried for. Yeah. They are just capable.
Suddenly he can pilot the ship.
Yep. Yep.
And at first he's in chains, he's been beaten up, his gold has been taken from him, but he says this ship, which is adrift in the waters and it can't be sailed, the crew is crying out and they're drunk and they're worried and it's about to sink, and he steps forward and says, no, I can sail the ship, but you've got to unshackle me and you've got to give me your knife so I have protection. And lo and behold, they unshackle him, give him a knife, and he can sail the ship. perfectly. He's a perfect pilot for the ship, you know.
Whatever the narrative needs to move
on. Exactly. Yeah. Which, that was a little...
distracting.
It was distracting, but I'm like, okay, I'll allow it.
It's fine. As long as you're having fun with it.
Yeah, and then the second chapter came along, and these privateers are raping and pillaging the land.
Oh.
And murdering shepherds for their sheep. Again, I think they're still around France. I don't know. He's booked the ship to Sicily so he can find his father. They tell him he's probably dead, but this boy, his name starts with a K. I can't remember.
It's something Frenchy.
Something French like slash Celtic.
Frenchy, Celty name that's long, yeah.
Yeah.
Like imagine something like Charlemagne that starts with a K.
And I'm just kind of going to call him the boy.
Yeah, the boy.
One of the things they wind up doing is they wind up kidnapping this girl.
Yeah.
And suddenly chapter 2 becomes Orientalism, the novel.
Perhaps.
And I really started to get grossed out.
Aww.
Like, he says, she became my prize because he rescues her from implied rape. Yeah. She suddenly becomes very attached to him. He suddenly speaks perfect Arabic and...
Seriously?
Yes.
Or does he learn it like very quickly?
No,
or...
he speaks it like...
Oh, well, he's a very learned fellow. Whatever the narrative needs.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Just he can't stop looking at her.
Yeah.
And she's so beautifully dressed. But her skin is light. She's Moorish. It's tolerable because her skin is light. I think at this point
they were sailing around from the top of France around Spain. So the Moors ran Spain for hundreds of years.
Yeah. And by the way, this is not me politicking. This is actually in the novel. Yeah. He's saying, oh, her skin is much lighter than you would expect for a Moor.
Yeah,
that
for
way,
a Moor.
That means that she's much more beautiful. It got really gross.
The book is up its time.
Be that as it may, it's still gross to read in 2024. So
yeah, it can be. I admit. Instead of gross, I just call it. It's a simplistic way of thinking. Yeah. This whole idea of this character is good because he saves the woman from being ravished. It's a very simplistic, old-fashioned way of showing.
This is very much a boy's adventure novel.
It's very much.
I could see why you liked it
as a young boy. Yeah.
How old were you when you read
this? Maybe 16.
This is definitely something young boys in the 30s and 40s would like to read. But, this is an adventure novel.
The fact that it was written in like a 1930s, 40s mindset, there's no actual sex in the whole
book. No, that's fine.
A woman will come close to being ravished, but she never actually is.
I'm fine with that. I'm just saying that just the tropes and the stereotypes
The book is tropes from one end to the other.
Yeah.
Yes, I agree with that.
Now that said, it's written very well.
It's Louis L'Amour, for fuck's sakes. Like, the man could write a book.
I haven't read anything else by him, so I can't say that for sure. But it does follow great patterns. The pacing is really good. Tension in every chapter, the end of every chapter.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, if I were a 16-year-old boy.
Yeah, if you're a 16-year-old boy, would you like this?
I would be. And it made me think about Herman Melville.
Ah, okay.
Before Herman Melville wrote We Dick, I think I talked about him on this podcast.
Oh, definitely. We've mentioned Melville.
Sure. Well, we're a very educated podcast.
Yeah, exactly. We're smart.
I was an English major. I don't know if anyone has heard that yet, but... Before Melville wrote Moby Dick, he wrote a bunch of other things. Among them, he got really famous and rich writing adventure novels.
Yeah,
this kind of reminds me of something. Yeah. Swashbuckling on the High Seas.
That's what it is. Yeah.
This is a Herman Melville story, kind of.
Yeah.
This is one of those books where I'm like, I understand why this is right up your alley.
At the time, it is a story that moves along.
Please put that quote on the back of this book from me. A story that moves along.
The story, it moves along. Okay, so based on that, number one, of course, did you think the first chapter worked as a first chapter?
I did.
Great. You think it had all the right elements that you
need? I did, yeah. It was engaging. It was, I would dare say it was exciting. It's an adventure novel.
Yeah.
We're not talking about Westerns.
Yeah.
Like, pick a Western, because I had so many notes about Westerns.
Oh, yeah. Like a Western book or Western? Literally, first thought in my head is The Power of the Dog, which...
That is a movie.
Well, yeah, but it's a Western movie.
I was going to say... Let me listen for a future episode.
All right,
pick a Western
book. I've never read a Western book.
You haven't? You haven't read Blood Meridian?
No.
Wow.
Why the heck would I have read Blood Meridian? The last time I heard you talking about Blood Meridian, you were like, "This is horrible."
Well, I mean, it's a great book, but yeah, the subject matter is actually horrific.
I don't want to necessarily read that.
Okay. You're going to have to read a Western and then recommend it to me so I can.
This is the closest thing to a Western I've read, and it takes place in 12th century Britain.
This is not a Western. I suppose I could write a paper comparing it to a Western,
there you
but
go.
My days of writing essays are over. So the answer to your first question is it worked as a first chapter.
Okay. Would you read more?
No, I'm going to step out and say this is not my kind of book. Just more, I'm not the target audience for it.
Clearly not, no.
But I like reading books about medieval historical stuff. Way back in the day, I read enough trashy bodice rippers that were...
It's
medieval in nature, kind of like this. And honestly, at some point I thought, is there going to be some fucking
no,
soon?
No, there is absolutely no
I know. That's kind of what it reminded me of. Yeah. It kind of reminded me of a romance novel.
This is interesting.
Just written from the man's perspective.
Yeah, yeah. This is interesting you bring up that it's like a romance novel. Do you remember the Kushiel's Dart series of books?
Oh,
which
God.
Are a series of books I love.
Of course.
And you read one book in that series. I read nine books in that series. Nine books in that series. Six of
and
them.
And we know what you're into.
Six of them, I will say, are some of the greatest novels I've ever read. The last three, the last three are just mid. All right. But but that's kind of what this book is like, where it goes all across Europe and adventures, 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 just where Kushiel, you know, fucks her way across Europe. This guy just swashbuckles his way across Europe. The format of the books are nearly identical.
That...
Like, you remember Kushiel's Dart?
I do.
This is just...
Unfortunately.
This is just Kushiel's Dart without the fucking. That's it.
Now, you need to put that on the back of the novel.
Yeah. No, I can't say that because somebody might not read it for that. It's like Kushiel's Dart with way less fucking.
Oh, the Puritans will read it.
Yeah, it's like Kushiel's Dart for the Puritans. There we go.
There we go.
Yeah. So what would you say, based on the style of writing, say Louis L'Amour had, instead of writing a book about 12th century Brittany and swashbuckling, he wrote a book about some female-centered subject matter you would like to read a book about?
No, yeah. Absolutely not. Because really? I know how men like this write women, and that would be garbage.
Yeah, see, I could keep going with this thought experiment. Say Louis L'Amour
please don't
really
do this.
Understood women, and he wrote this book, but from a woman's perspective. Do you think he could do it?
No, because then it would probably be Kushiel's Dart, and then I would just be pissed off.
Well, would you say the author of Kushiel's Dart, who was a woman, understood women?
No.
Oh, okay.
I hated that first book so much.
I found it interesting that you read that whole book that you say you hated. Most of these books, I can't even get you to read two chapters.
Honestly, I don't think I read all of Kushiel's Dart.
Oh, okay. You stopped at certain points?
I know I stopped at certain points, and I probably skipped ahead.
It even kind of starts in the same place.
It does.
Medieval France.
Yeah.
I think that the writer of Kushiel's Dart must have read this book.
Yeah,
and was like, you know what this needs? Way more fucking.
Honestly, Kushiel's Dart was someone who said, I'm too good to write a romance novel, so I'm going to write this. And I'm like, go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
Don't be that fucking elitist. I hated Kushiel's Dart.
Well, but you didn't hate Louis L'Amour's The Walking Drum. It's just not for
you. I didn't hate it.
Okay.
But it was not for me.
There we go. He had actually planned to write more books in this series.
Interesting.
Because the book kind of ends on just an absolute cliffhanger, where the character is kind of done exploring Europe and the Near East, and he's kind of going towards India and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But Louis L'Amour never got to write anymore because he died. So sadly, we'll never get to know. He'd actually planned to write three books in this series where the character, the second book spent time around India, and then the last book was going to be mostly in China.
It's like a Marco Polo.
Very much so, and it would have been kind of neat. But like I say, unfortunately, Louis L'Amour was already in poor health when he wrote this book and died shortly thereafter.
That's too bad.
But he looks like he had a lot of fun writing this.
All right, everyone, keep reading.
Keep reading.
Thanks for listening to First Chapters, a podcast from Grey Cat Books. Your hosts were Nina McNamara and Engineer Mike. Our music was provided by Alex Productions and Virtua Jams. Check out our website at greycatbooks.com for links to our credits. Thanks again for listening.
Louis L'Amour, very French name for a very cowboy fellow.